Utah Famous listeners, we are hooking you up. You may have heard of Frostbox, a decorate-it-yourself cake kit that is delivered to your doorstep with everything you need, including the cake. All you have to do is decorate it with the provided frosting and toppings, and you have a professional-looking cake without the hassle. This is great for birthday parties, cooped-up kids, or basically just anyone who wants to decorate and eat cake. We have a coupon code for our listeners, and it is UTF10. That is UTF10 for 10% off your purchase when you visit frostbox.store. Check it out.
Well, I'm going back to you.
Welcome to Utah Famous, a podcast about the people, places, and history that make Utah so unexpectedly awesome. I'm Sarah. I'm a Utah transplant with Canadian roots.
And I'm Jordan, and I'm a Beehive State native. You said that like very...
I know.
Was that Canadian or was that just like Western?
Sounded maybe like Southern.
Southern? I love it.
Southwestern? I don't know. It just hit me.
Just felt inspired.
You know, when you say the same thing over and over again, you got to kind of spice it up a little, right, Jordan?
Yeah, I have done that. And I also, I listen and sometimes I think I say my name weird because I say it so fast. Just like Jordan. Oh. Like that, I think that.
It's your Utah accent,
I know.
Jordan.
And actually, I've been super paranoid about my Utah accent.
Oh my gosh.
And I forgot to say, I'm not like paranoid, yeah. But yeah, a little more
but
aware.
You're aware. Yeah.
But my friend Gabby from Atlanta that I talk about every other episode, she texted me and said, "Henri?" What does that mean? Like, she didn't even have it in her vocabulary.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
It's just was not
so
a word that is used a lot
to me because I use that word all the time and use it wrong. Ornery, right?
Ornery.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Anyway.
I know.
Yeah, it was confirmed from our sources in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Henri is not a word.
It is a word. It's just not one that
you don't pronounce
people
it that
use
way.
That much.
Might as well not be a word.
Yeah. But yeah, so how are things?
Pretty good. You can probably see from your house. Okay, you told me you can see from your house that there is a fire in the mountain right now.
Yes.
Seems like it started sometime earlier today. I saw it going and I thought it was Mill Creek Canyon. You thought it was Mill Creek Canyon. It's Neff's Canyon, which is right next door.
Okay.
But it sounds like 60 acres as of this afternoon. I have no idea if it's contained yet, but we don't need that right now. We just don't need that.
There's been a lot of fires. I mean, obviously out in California and Oregon, huge, tons of fires. But I mean, in Utah gets fires too, but I don't know if everything just seems worse because it's 2020.
I know.
It's like, of course, a fire.
I remember for a couple years, the Farmington Mountain and Bountiful/Centerville would catch on fire in one way, shape, or form. One time.
Like every year.
Yeah, one time it was caught on fire from my friend. I don't think I was friends with him at the time, but they were doing fireworks or something dumb like you do when you're in high school, junior high, whatever. But there was almost every summer there was a fire, and I actually don't feel like there's been one up there in a while, but anyway, I haven't seen one in Salt Lake County area, I don't think, since we've lived here, so that was kind of surprising. But hopefully they'll have that under control soon because we are taking our family pictures in Mill Creek Canyon tomorrow night.
Don't you dare ruin our family pictures.
We're going to be coughing. We won't be able to breathe, but we're going to do it.
But you'll have like a smoky background.
Yeah.
It'll be really cool.
Yeah. Maybe I'll bring like a spotlight. We can have some backlit smoky portraits.
Yeah. Now you're thinking.
I heard we got a message from a listener.
Yeah, so our Salt Lake City Cemetery episode, we got a message from Chris Serene. I think that's how you say your last name, Chris. I'm not sure. But he is like an expert on the Salt Lake City Cemetery, and we, like, he offered to give us a tour, and I just might take him up on that.
Yes.
He, like, knows it very well and is very knowledgeable about the people buried there, where things are.
Yeah.
So thank you, Chris, for reaching out to us, and he's awesome. He knows a lot about Utah stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I really want to know, yeah, who, how many other people are buried there? Are there still plots available? Yeah. I listed all the names. Most of them, I mean, all of them were men.
Right.
But I do know that Martha Hughes Cannon, who we talked about your yes. episode, she is yes. buried there. I knew her husband was, but I didn't know if, like, if there was some weird thing where only men could be buried there. I didn't know. So I didn't know for sure. But it, yeah, she is buried there too. So anyway, I want to, yeah. we'll definitely have to go check that out. And that would be really yeah. fun to get a tour. And will he let us say emo, emo, emo three times around the grave?
I'm guessing.
I mean,
probably.
He won't care.
Why not?
Can we get a haunted
It'll be
tour?
In broad daylight.
I need to know all the haunted stories too.
Yeah, maybe he has all the scoop on that.
That would be fun. We should figure out if we can, I don't know how to like interview someone when we're out and about walking around, but maybe we could ask him a few questions.
Mic us up somehow. Yeah.
We'll figure that out.
But yeah, that would be really cool.
Cool. Well, yeah. Let's do it.
All right. Are you ready, Jordan?
I am ready.
I did an episode on the Sundance Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And if you will recall, and
I will.
Thank you. I briefly talked about the Sundance Resort because obviously that's a part of it. But we didn't do like a deep dive
right.
into the resort part. And since it's fall and it's absolutely beautiful up there, I was up there a few days ago. It's stunning. This will be part of my campaign to get people to go up there. Granted, the entire state of Utah was up there when I was up there, it felt like. But everyone needs to hurry and go now before the leaves fall off the trees, because they just look incredible right now.
Nice.
So, yes. Okay, so the Sundance Resort is located, if in case you didn't know, in Provo Canyon. It's about 13 miles northeast of Provo, and it shares a zip code with Provo, so it's technically part of Provo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure about that, but that is the case. So the resort is located on the backside of Mount Timpanogos, and it's part of the Wasatch Mountain Range, and the resort covers over 5,000 acres.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm not a good judge of numbers, as we know, but that sounds very big.
That is huge, yeah.
Yeah. If you're unfamiliar with Provo Canyon, you can access the canyon from 800 North in Orem or University Ave in Provo. They converge right at the mouth of the canyon, and you drive up the canyon, you'll pass Bridal Veil Falls. We did an episode on Bridal Veil Falls on your right, and then you'll go through a tunnel, and it's like the first left after the tunnel. And I mean, I like that I'm giving driving directions.
I'm visualizing it on their phones. They don't anymore. It's apocalyptic times.
They need me.
This is the only way.
Yes. So then you take that road up until you see the sign for Sundance. And then if you want to do like the Alpine Loop, you continue to take that road. You don't go into Sundance.
Mm.
And the Alpine Loop loops all the way around and comes out American Fork Canyon.
Nice.
Which is, again, beautiful. Go do that. Go drive that with the rest of Utah. But, and you can also come north to Provo Canyon via like Park City Heber and go south. Anyways, but again, go up there. You will not regret it.
Yeah.
Take the ski lift. It's beautiful. Okay, so let's get into the history of the resort. Because we all know that it is owned by Robert Redford.
Oh, yes, we do.
But it wasn't obviously always his. The area known today as the Sundance Resort in the North Fork Canyon, that's what that canyon is called. There is a South Fork Canyon in Provo. This is North Fork. It was surveyed in the mid-1800s by Andrew Jackson Stewart Jr.
Wow.
And his sons, Andrew Scott and John Stewart. While working for the U.S. government, they discovered the view of Mount Timpanogos, which is absolutely beautiful back there. Mm-hmm. And they each received 160 acres of land under the Homestead Act, and nearby lots were given to the family members. So the Homestead Act, really quick, it was enacted during the Civil War in 1862, and it provided that any adult citizen or intended citizen who had never borne arms against the U.S. government could claim 160 acres wow. of surveyed government land.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
so claimants,
random, yeah. kind of.
Yeah, I guess it's... Yeah.
Why like 160 and then...
Don't know the specifics on that, but this is how they got their land. Claimants were required to improve the plot by building a dwelling and cultivating the land. So that's how they each got 160 acres. I think they were trying to maybe develop the West a little bit more.
Mm, right.
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So soon... Members of the Stewart family erected log cabins. By 1911, they owned 2,200 acres and were raising sheep and cattle. They formed a company, North Fork Investment Co., in order to share income and protect the land. The area was known as Stewart Flats due to the large number of Stewart family members living in the area. To get to Stewart Flats in North Fork before 1920, there was only one unpaved road that had a grade of 18 to 20 degrees on the last half mile. Ooh. It was referred to as the Big Dugway due to the trench formed from dragging large trees down the road. Mm. Yeah, in the early 1920s, an automobile road was built by the Utah County Commission that passed through Stewart Falls as it connected Aspen Grove and Wildwood, Utah. So, Mount Timpanogos became a popular mountain to hike after 1912 when Eugene L. Roberts, a professor at Brigham Young University, opened a hiking trail and took his students. This hike only included 22 students, but sparked the annual Timpanogos hike. The Timpanogos hike began after mid-July when there was a full moon. The night before the hike, participants would gather for a celebration that usually had a bonfire. A favorite part of the celebration was the enactment of the Legend of Timpanogos.
Wow.
So, and I was going to like tell the Legend of Timpanogos, but I feel like I want to like save that.
Do a whole episode on that.
On Timpanogos.
But is like quite the ceremony just for, I mean, I guess how,
I know.
I guess you'll tell me how long the hike is. Do you have the camp?
I think people would start it like really early, or I don't know if they started it at night, because I was looking it up like on like all trails to see how long it took most people right now.
Yeah.
Because you can still get through there through the Aspen Grove entrance. I think there's another way to get up there through Pleasant Grove. But and I think most people, it takes between like 8, maybe 8 to 10 hours to hike to the top. It's over 15 miles.
Oh, wow.
And then it takes about half that to get down.
Right.
So it's like a doozy of a hike.
Okay. And back then, it's like they're wearing like 20 pounds of clothes, giant boots.
Yes. And these giant metal canteens. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't have Patagonia and Cotopaxi backpacks to make it easy.
They're not wearing lightweight puffer jackets or anything like that. So, but that's when it started. It was 1912. It's a pretty popular hike now. I have never done it. Have you done it?
No, I've gone into the Timpanogos Cave, and I remember it being a really hard hike to get into that cave, but I was only in fifth grade, so it might be the easiest hike in the world, and I just had short legs.
I have no idea.
But, I've never
done Timp Caves or... Timp.
We got to do
I'm
it.
Not a hiker,
we got to do
so.
The cave because I,
oh,
my, you know, my what? Memory of it is yes. I don't think it's. I think it's like a mile hike. I don't think it's, and I think it's flat for the most part.
Overestimating my abilities. But yeah, maybe we'll look into it, Jordan, for the Sarah, Timpanogos you'll love episode.
It. In my fifth grade brain, it was so cool.
I've heard the caves are really cool.
Yeah.
We'll save that for the Timpanogos episode.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so in 1922, the Forest Service over the Wasatch National Forest, part of the United States Department of Agriculture, requested to put in a trail that crossed part of the property owned by the North Fork Investment Co. The Stewart family appreciated the hikes since they brought more popularity to the area. And today, the trails around the Sundance Mountain Resort offer views of North Fork and of Stewart Falls. Many trails also feature plaques to mark flora and fauna in the area and are lined with benches. There are also three major biking trails at Sundance that even have ski lift service after Memorial Day weekend. Mm. So, have you ever hiked to Stewart Falls?
I don't think so. I think I've been to Sundance like only once when it wasn't snowy, and then I've skied there.
Oh, nice.
But I was only in Utah County during college, and then I got out of there as quick as I could. Just kidding. It's great. And
well, you missed out.
And I did. I totally missed out. I need to go. I think I've done the Alpine Loop. I mean, my memory is so bad. So anyway, it's on my list now.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, definitely go do that. I did hike Stewart Falls once with a large group of people, and I'm not a hiker, so I'm pretty sure I was like socially pressured into hiking it, but I did it in like my early 20s, I think. And that was the first and last time I did it. I don't think it's incredibly difficult for like normal people, but, and like children can hike it. So I think it's a pretty low impact. I don't know.
Most people can handle it.
Normal people. Yeah. The waterfall is 2 tiers and over 200 feet and I'm sure right now it looks amazing.
Yeah.
With all the colors. Like I'm telling you guys, the colors right now are crazy.
We'll go.
So again, you get to the trail through Aspen Grove, which is just above Sundance. So it's not too far.
Cool.
And obviously it's called Stewart Falls after the Stewart family, which I had no idea why it was called that. And now I do.
There we go.
There we go.
They picked the best 160 acres.
I know. They really did.
So
they were smart.
Yeah.
That Stewart family.
Yeah.
A ski area was later opened as Timp Haven in 1944. Mm. The name was chosen by a contest in which anyone could submit their suggestion. Ruth Biddulph submitted the winning name of Timp Haven, and she was given a season pass. Hmm. Timp Haven was owned by S. Paul Stewart and run with the help of his brother Ray Stewart for over 20 years. Paul managed the slopes, built the ski lodge, and installed the water system. Ray Stewart was responsible for clearing the trees and developing the Timp Haven Ski Resort and contributed to the original rope tow that was used.
Wow.
Hilda Stewart. Yeah.
Hilda, all of that. That's crazy.
I know. Like they started it all.
Yeah.
Hilda Stewart, Paul's wife, had a cafe on the resort property and served hamburgers and other meals to ski guests. Paul later purchased the interests of the other members of the Stewart family, which altogether owned between 3,000 and 4,000 acres of the property. The investment in the land in North Fork never paid dividends for the North Fork Investment Company owners. So basically, I think that means he bought out his family members, but no one really like made money on it.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So the resort had a rope tow that was built by J.W. Daniel, who had tried to make a tow in Hobble Creek Canyon near Springville, Utah. The tow was powered by a Chevrolet truck, but was unsuccessful in that area. The Timpanogos Mountain Club persuaded Daniel to bring the tow to North Fork Canyon. The tow was not ready for winter of 1944, and so it was abandoned by the club. Ray Stewart bought the truck and equipment and overhauled it to create a working tow to run on Saturdays and Sundays. The tow was difficult to use, however, because some of the roads leading to the resort were not plowed regularly, making it difficult to drive the truck, and cold mornings caused the vehicle to freeze over. So sometimes there just was no tow rope. The tow pulled skiers 500 feet up the mountain. In addition, when Timp Haven opened, the creek was closer to the hill. So if you've been to Sundance, there's a little creek at the bottom of the hill, but there's kind of a flat area. But back then, the creek was closer to the hill than it is today. So skiers had to make a quick turn at the bottom to avoid falling into the water.
I wonder how many people fell in. I just want to watch.
Ski season at Timp Haven started around Christmas and lasted until early March. A day pass to ski was only $1.
Nice.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And due to lighting installed by Provo City, Timp Haven allowed night skiing on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So that's cool.
Yeah.
While owned by the Stewart family, the ski area was closed on Sundays. Timp Haven also held ski races that were sponsored by various local organizations like the Timpanogos Ski Club or the Hoover Cup. The Timpanogos Mountain Club cleared an area on the East Hill and built a 45-foot ski jump.
Wow. Wow.
Which I don't know if like that is still there. I'm not sure.
I don't remember seeing it, but it's been a while.
Yeah. Ski classes at the resort were started by Jesse Schofield, the supervisor of Provo City Recreation, in the winter of 1946. Professors at Brigham Young University also started ski classes, bringing buses of students in the afternoons. By that time, Timp Haven also had a tubing and toboggan hill.
Ooh.
Nice. The Stewart family began expansion in 1947, and a T-bar lift was added at the base in 1948.
Wait, a what lift?
A T-bar.
Oh, okay.
You know what a T-bar? Yeah. Where you kind of lean on it and it pulls you up?
Yeah, yeah.
And so the T-bar lift was about 1,000 feet in length. It went up 1,000 feet. Mm. The lower terminal was seated on a platform that was 14 feet in the air. A 1938 Ford truck provided the power for the lift. This lift ran until 1953 when a single chairlift was added in the fall. It had a length of about 2,500 feet. The first double chairlift was installed in the fall of 1965 and replaced the lower single chair and upper T-bar, vertically climbing 1,400 feet.
Wow.
It had an accident the following July, which resulted in two fatalities.
Ooh.
The resort continued expanding, however, and a lodge was built in 1957, the foundation of that lodge is what's under the general store and the grill today.
Okay.
If you've ever been to that part. A Poma lift, which is a kind of surface T-bar lift, I guess, was added in 1958. And a modern ski lift, the Mandan, was installed in 1964, and the two T-bar lifts were removed. The Navajo lift was installed in 1969, and the Arrowhead lift in 1985. These mostly mean nothing to me, but I'm assuming they mean something to other people.
Other people are thrilled that they now know.
Other people are like, exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I had no idea they were put in at that time. I was like,
a
baby.
Right.
Yeah, so someone's thrilled.
You're welcome, somebody out there. The Stewart family built a subdivision on Stewart Flats in the 1960s called Timp Haven Homes. And that was when Robert Redford purchased a 2-acre lot.
Oh, just wanted a little taste of it.
Yeah. And I'll get into like more of the history behind that. This is just a quick history, but I'll get into that a little more.
Cool.
So later in August 1968, Redford purchased the entirety of Tent Haven. The land is now known as Sundance, which the resort was renamed from Tent Haven to Sundance after the role Robert Redford played in the 1969 film.
Oh, yeah. What was that movie?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
So cool.
Have you heard of it, Jordan?
I heard of it. I know the whole thing. I've seen it recently.
You know everything. Yes.
I guess it's exactly. Actually been a year because it's almost our birthday, but.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
But yeah, such a good show.
Yes. So the resort of Sundance is not to be confused with the town of Sundance, Wyoming. The location from which
anyone
the Sundance Kid got his name from Sundance, Wyoming.
Right.
Obviously not Sundance, Utah, because that was not a thing back then.
Right.
And then Redford's 1972 film, Jeremiah Johnson, was filmed near the resort. Have you watched that movie?
No, I have not.
I feel like in high school, we watched it in like Utah history. Jeremiah Johnson. Anyways, I'll have to fact check that. Because of its lower elevation, the resort had a shorter ski season than its competitors. In order to increase revenue, Redford wanted to create an Aspen-like atmosphere and use the resort to promote the arts and draw in Hollywood stars. So the Sundance Film Festival was held at the resort to help it achieve its purpose. And that is a very quick summary of Robert Redford's involvement. But I'm going to kind of...
We'll circle back.
Give a little more background
to that. We'll do a little Alpine loop back to that.
We will Alpine loop right back. Yep. Cool. The Sundance website says, in 1969, Robert Redford bought the land now known as Sundance and envisioned the careful growth of a community committed to the balance of art, nature, and community. Sundance is an arts community, a recreational community, a community of people who appreciate the beauty of nature and feel the responsibility to preserve it. Today, Sundance offers an atmosphere steeped in cultural heritage, inspired by the Ute tribes that first inhabited this canyon and continuing through the early 20th century as the Stuarts, a family of Scottish immigrants, homesteaded the area. The second generation of Stuarts developed the mountain into a small ski resort called Tent Haven. Investors began eyeing the picturesque locale as a place to erect expansive condominiums, but Redford wanted to develop a little and preserve a great deal. Rejecting advice from New York investors to fill the canyon with an explosion of lucrative hotels and condominiums, Robert Redford saw his newly acquired land as an ideal locale for environmental conservation and artistic experimentation. In 1981, the Sundance Institute was founded here as Sundance Mountain Resort, followed by the Sundance Catalog in 1988. Many writers, directors, actors, and artists have been inspired by the beauty of this canyon. Years of experimentation and refinement have ultimately resulted in what we now call Sundance. It's Sundance's ability to blend process and place that makes it dynamically unique and places it on uncharted waters on a steady course all its own.
Aww.
So there's that beautiful description.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Of Sundance.
I definitely think the Stuart family is happy with what it became, because it could have just became like privately owned residential area.
Yes,
and they're really preserving the beauty of it and using it for good.
Yeah. And like when you go up to Sundance, like it really could just be a bunch of hotels and stuff like that. But it hasn't like changed much over even the years that I've lived here. And there's something kind of lovely about that, you know, like.
Yeah, they could go bigger. They could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just not going to. And the changes that they do are not like these big obvious changes that like change how everything looks, you know?
Right.
So
it still feels like really quaint that. And local, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found an Architectural Digest article about Robert Redford's home up there. Mm. And it talks a little bit in detail about the beginning of his time there. So, because it's kind of like, I'm sorry, how did Robert Redford find this place and why? You know, like what's going on?
Right.
So it talks about him. So he was like passing through the canyon on his way home to Los Angeles from Colorado. And he was going to college in Colorado, and he found himself like going back to camp up there. And he said he instinctively felt at home. But after college, he studied painting in Florence, and he eventually moved to New York to act on Broadway. But then he got married to Provo native Lola Van Wagenen, which cemented his Utah connection. And in 1961, the couple acquired their first very modest piece of local real estate, North Fork. So the 2 acres that we talked about, they got that for $500.
Oh my gosh.
So,
wow.
Not too shabby. So this is like before he was much of anything.
Yeah.
No offense to Robert.
He's always been a huge star, Sarah.
He's always been a star since birth. The view of the home site was then and still is of a pristine landscape. So during the early 60s, Redford's career was quietly gathering momentum. So every time he would like do another TV show, he would buy another acre of land. So in 1963, he built his family a small house on the property, doing the construction himself.
Wow.
I know, an experience he calls the first important thing I accomplished. So, because he had 4 kids with Lola Van Wagenen. They divorced in 1985, but they had 4 kids. The first child actually, this is so sad, died of SIDS.
Aww.
A few months after it was born.
Shoot.
So then, but they raised their other 3 kids there. By the late 60s, though, the immense popularity of several movies in succession, culminating with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, gave Redford the means necessary to make an enormous and what seemed like a crazy investment. I want to buy a canyon, he informed his lawyer. He then proceeded to do so, forestalling a rumored development scheme, which would have parceled the land into 1/4-acre lots. So he bought up the joint.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I just had no idea he was investing in this area before he even did the movie.
Like
I didn't realize he lived here for so long and like,
I know,
like built a house and like really spent time. That's so cool.
Yeah. Like before Butch Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so crazy. So for the next 10 years, Sundance was a low-key resort, stylishly rustic, of course, with some of the finest powder in the West. Redford said, it was the private Shangri-La of a millionaire Hollywood star. I couldn't get a bank loan. Every vehicle we had stalled. The waiters didn't come to work. Our sewers backed up. We were robbed. And the tree in the Tree Room restaurant died.
Oh my gosh.
During that period of, quote, spending money and not knowing what I was doing, Redford also attempted to balance the gains and losses that had come to him with celebrity. He was wary of promoting Sundance, although he did just enough promotion to keep it solvent. He was also fiercely protected of the canyon's privacy and integrity. He said, I guess I was impossible to be in business with, so he bought out his original business partners who couldn't understand why he refused to expand. He had discovered, though, that to keep something intact, you have to keep your own vision of it intact. Mm. So he had come up with ways to make Sundance profitable without developing like crazy up there.
That's so great.
I know.
Who else would have done that? I just think everyone would have just sold.
Seriously. And so he, quote unquote, developed in other ways. So in 1981, like the website said, the Sundance Institution was established, which eventually spawned the Sundance Film Festival. But it started as a summer residence fellowship for like screenwriters and directors. So people would come to Sundance and stay for like a month for intense experimental work in a film like laboratory.
Wow.
With like professionals. Sundance today has 50 developed acres, which include a rehearsal hall and screening room, a gift shop, two restaurants and a bar. There are private homes, cabins, and rental cottages. So 450 acres are devoted to skiing and recreation, and an area has been set aside to help replenish the wild game that was once hunted. Mm. So grouse, mule deer, elk, groundhogs, and moose are now flourishing again, as they're, and there are six rare species of hawk and eagle up there.
Wow, that is so cool.
So, yeah. And also on Mount Timpanogos, there's also, I don't think they were hunted, but there are like mountain goats, mm-hmm. mountain sheep.
It's mountain.
So, mountain. Sorry. Totally said it wrong.
So he like he's developed like 500 acres, and then the rest of the 4,500 are just wild, like just wild, just like trails, nature. Hiking trails or whatever. But
yeah,
just that is so cool.
Because you don't think it's that big, because all you see, you know, when you're there, you see the ski hills and the lifts and stuff.
Well, and I can't really even fathom so much what 5,000 acres looks like, you know. But it just, like I said, to have so much land in such a beautiful area and not just sell it for homes and neighborhoods is really cool. And I think that's pretty admirable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. And there is actually quite a bit to do up at Sundance. And I didn't really realize that till I was looking on their site. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just so much stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like I said, there's a few restaurants. So you can find casual eats at the Foundry Grill, which I love the Foundry, with its wood-fired grill. And they also have a really nice Sunday brunch buffet.
Ooh.
Although I don't think they're doing breakfast right now because of the virus. But once that's all over, hopefully that'll be back. Then there's the Tree Room. So it's a little more pricey and elegant. And it's filled with Native American art from Robert Redford's private collection. There is a massive pine tree through the middle with hundreds of corks at its base.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's the same tree that died that he was talking about earlier. I don't know if it's still alive, but
they probably got
there's a tree there.
Yeah.
I hope so, yeah. And I've been there once, but I don't really remember the tree
with the corks at the bottom, Sarah.
The tree. I mean, it's called the Tree Room.
So artsy and cool. Corks, bottom of the tree.
Yeah. So the centerpiece is the Owl Bar with its... Okay, this I didn't know till this. So it has this venerable oak bar that had been commissioned by none other than Butch Cassidy. So the outlaw had it made in Ireland.
The counter?
Butch Cassidy. Yes.
Okay.
So the outlaw had it made in Ireland, and Redford discovered it a century later in a bar in Thermopolis, Wyoming.
No.
And it was covered in formica and shag carpeting. It took 18 months to restore.
No.
So that is at the Owl Bar right now.
How
is
would
that
they
crazy?
Know? No, I'm calling bull. That is crazy.
Well, this bar is where, the Wild Bunch used to go. There's like history there. Anyways.
The one in Wyoming.
Isn't that nuts? In Wyoming, yeah.
That is so cool.
I know. I was like, wait a second. What? But that's a thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So there is also the Sundance Deli, which is kind of, if you go there, it's in between like the gift shop and the Foundry. It has sandwiches and salads and baked goods and coffee. It's a cute little like deli counter.
Yeah.
So during the summer, some of the lifts are open, which is absolutely lovely if you ever get a chance to take it. And you can take bikes up on the lift, and then there are bike trails you can bike all the way down. You can also take the lift and hike down if you want. There are biking clinics you can take and bike rentals if you don't have a bike. There are even mountain bike races and events that go on.
Very cool.
There are outdoor concerts and musicals in the summer at the Sundance Amphitheater. So I used to go to the amphitheater, I think, like every fall, because I used to do merch for Peter Breinholt and Ryan Shoup. And I don't know if you know who they are.
I've heard both of their names, and I'm trying. They're musicians.
Yeah, they're just local musicians, bands.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to work for them.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, like, I used to love, yeah, there'd be a Sundance show every year. Mm. Hang out at the amphitheater. And I think this summer they did like car concerts instead of regular ones.
Oh.
But they usually, I know, so sad. They usually have, it's called the Bluebird Cafe Summer Concert Series during the summer, but this year it was postponed till next year. Mm. But the Bluebird Cafe is a famous cafe in Nashville. And so they've partnered with the cafe to have like singers and songwriters and musicians come every year. And they usually do a musical or two.
Oh, cool.
In the summer. I'm not sure if they did any this year, but
yeah, but it's all outside.
Yes, it's so lovely.
That is cool.
The amphitheater. There are also zip line tours at Sundance. So that's why we were there on Sunday. And then I failed miserably at it. And I'll tell you the story.
You later. Failed at the zip line?
I failed. Well, I just have like bad experiences with zip lines.
I can't wait. Okay.
So, and I realize that I am the common denominator here, but the zip lines that you can do either like three or there's like five, I think, total. So go do that.
Wait, three or five? What, zip lines? Oh, okay.
Yes. So you can, if you do all five, it costs a little bit more than just doing three of them.
Okay, got it.
But also, like, at the top, there is a little cafe, I think, called the Bear Claw.
Mm.
And the building that the Bear Claw is in was used in the Jeremiah Johnson movie.
Oh, the Bear Claw.
Just FYI.
The cafe or the actual?
The little cafe.
Okay, okay. Cool.
So, and I heard there's really good nachos up there, but
I was expecting to
go there. Cool. I know, right?
Cool.
At the top of a mountain.
Yeah.
There is an art shack and glass blowing facility. They often have visiting artists that come and do workshops there.
Cool.
There's so much, you guys. There is horseback riding on a handful of trails, like four or five trails, including up to Stewart Falls.
There you go, Sarah. Just get on a horse.
Maybe that's, oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. That's how I'm going to get to Stewart Falls. There's a yoga and horseback riding thing where you ride into a meadow, I think, somewhere, and then do yoga.
Oh my gosh, that is the hippiest, dippiest thing I've ever heard, and I really want to do it.
It's Sundance. It's perfectly Sundance.
Oh, that's great.
It's kind of, they're kind of hippy-dippy
up there.
I thought
you were going to say yoga on the horse, and I was just going to croak, but that's better. It's still hippy-dippy, but I love it.
I'm not going to rule that out.
Yeah, maybe someone tried it.
Yes, there is nearby fly fishing, I think, in the Provo River. There is mountaintop yoga, if yoga is your thing. Obviously, there's lots of hiking you can do around there. So there are, during the summer, there's full moon lift rides,
Have you done that
before?
I think we were planning to do that one year and something happened and we couldn't go. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. So whenever there's a full moon, they will do lift rides at night. And now there are Halloween lift rides.
Which now we're talking.
I don't think the lift itself is like Halloween-y, but they have like some Halloween stuff at the base and like show a little movie while you're waiting. And it's supposed to be like very family friendly.
Cool.
And one year, I think they only did this one year. they did like a sleepy hollow haunted hayride thing up at Sundance.
Yeah.
And I went and it was awesome. Like, I'm not a big haunted house person, but you're in like this hayride thing and like people jumped down and scared you and stuff. But it was really cool.
But you enjoyed it.
I think they only did that one year. Yeah. Oh. There is one at Soldier Hollow. Closer to Heber that I also did, and that one like legit scared me.
Sarah, ghosts aren't real.
I don't know why I do these things because they scare me.
Oh,
no,
I love
but like
it.
There's a guy on a horse,
yes,
with no head.
Yes, is he chasing
and
you?
And like they put lights on the horses so it looks like the horse's eyes are red.
Oh, cool.
And he's like walking like right next to your hayride.
Oh,
scary.
That is my favorite part of the Halloween parade in Disney World. And I think they do it in Disneyland now, too. But they start off with the headless horseman, and he's on a Clydesdale horse, and he's huge, and it's so cool.
And scary. Have you, and when you lived in New York, did you ever go out to Sleepy Hollow?
No, we didn't.
Oh, you did?
I don't know why. We're so lame.
Because, when I lived out there, we went out there for Halloween. It was pretty fun.
Nice.
Anyways, that's a side track right there. But there's a Halloween haunted... Oh, I don't know if it's a haunted lift ride, but there's Halloween lift rides. So in the winter, there is obviously skiing. And I think 4 days a week, they have night skiing. So they have ski, snowboard rentals, and lessons. They also offer snowshoeing, if that's something that interests you. You can also do the zip tour in the winter if you want to.
Oh, nice.
There is also cross-country skiing available and cross-country lessons. And I think they have like nighttime, like full moon cross country sessions as well, which would be kind of interesting if that's your thing. They also have specific Ladies Day clinics.
Ooh.
For anyone interested in that. I don't know if that's just for regular skiing or cross country skiing. They have a senior ski group, and there is a Sundance ski team and a Sundance snowboard team.
Is there a ladies senior ski group that I can join?
You can start one.
I need the both categories.
If not, yes, because you are old. They maybe have like kid classes that do that.
Maybe. Okay, Sarah, now you're just getting rude.
Just the really easy.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I don't ski, so I have no right to say anything.
No, you're good.
But okay, so that's like all the things you can do up at Sundance, and I'm probably like missed something, but that was all the info I could find, which to me is just a lot. There's a lot you can do up there.
Yeah. Holy.
Yeah. So in 2019, the resort celebrated its 50th anniversary.
Oh,
which is,
I'm so glad they celebrated last year and not this year.
I know, right? And yeah, like we said, like the thing that's so great and the whole point for Robert Redford was to not develop it and change it a lot. And luckily, it's still kind of rustic and kind of like you can tell it's been there for a while, but it's just there's something kind of lovely about that.
Yeah.
And like I did say in the film festival episode, I did see Robert Redford up there once in the deli.
So cool. Was he eating a sandwich?
Maybe like 15 years ago. I don't think so. I think he was talking. I don't know what he was doing there.
Just
probably
chilling.
Checking up on people.
Just hanging. He can do whatever he wants.
But I've never seen him before or since. I do think I know on the road where his driveway gate is.
Sarah.
It's just, I feel like everyone who has been up there a million times like me knows where that is. And I think if you're on the lift coming down, you can see his property. I'm assuming that's his property because there's a lot of cleared trees and like one house.
Right. So. And there's like no other houses because he bought
so
up on the land.
I don't know who else that would be. Yeah.
Very cool.
So, But he announced last year that he was retiring from acting. Oh, and he's 84 years old.
I think I do remember hearing that.
Yeah, maybe he's just chilling up at Sundance.
Has he done something recently? Or not recently, but
I think he did something a few years ago and he was like, okay, I'm done. Which, good on you. Like, he's had a good career.
For sure.
And so
he's earned his right to retire. Yeah. Well, cool. That's awesome. I had no idea that. Like I said, I just thought I assumed he lived in California. He got put in this role for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He came to Utah and filmed it, fell in love with Utah, bought the property.
Yeah.
Done and done. Like, I don't know why that was in my head.
I think that's what everyone thinks. Yeah.
So that he lived here for so long and slowly bought up all those acres is so cool.
Yeah. And so, I think he's just retired living there. He did get married, I think in 2009 to someone he's been with since the 90s.
Okay.
And so I'm guessing they're just, chilling in Sundance now, which, you know what? There are much worse things than chilling in Sundance.
Yeah, worse places. So, that is really cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
Well, thanks.
Little history lesson.
Thanks for the history lesson. I need to go up. I need to go up soon.
Yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope we all learned something cool.
Added stuff to our list.
I know.
I wanted to say, Robert Redford did the Sundance thing. Paul Newman has Paul Newman's own brand where it donates to charity. Both of them just seem like really amazing guys.
I know, kind of thinking of things outside of themselves. And I feel that wasn't cool.
The popular thing. Now it's of course every celebrity has their brand that donates something to something, and which is great, but it's kind of, an expected thing. But back then, feel like it, that kind of thing was expected or kind of in the, in vogue or whatever. Anyway, I just think they're cool.
Yeah. Yes, they are cool. And if you haven't listened to our episode on Butch Cassidy or the Sundance Film Festival, now is your chance.
Butch Cassidy was our first episode.
Yep.
The film festival we did pretty soon after. So go check them out.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find us on Instagram at Utah Famous. We have a Facebook page that you're welcome to join. We are on Twitter at Utah Famous Pod. And you're always welcome to DM us on Instagram or email us at utahfamous@gmail.com with comments or suggestions or tips or stories.
Yes.
All of the above.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to give us a tour of Sundance and introduce us to Robert Redford himself, we will be there any day.
We will.
Let us know.
We love the place. Yep.
All right.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I'm going back to you.